ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय।
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 Fourth Canto, Chapter 12, Dhruva Maharaj goes back to Godhead, text number 28. Maitreya Vacha,
Maitreya Vacha,
Nishamya,
Nishamya,
Vaikuntha,
Vaikuntha,
Niyoja,
Niyoja,
Mukhyayo,
Mukhyayo,
Madhuchutam,
Madhuchutam,
Vacham,
Vacham,
Guru Kramapriya,
Guru Kramapriya,
Krita Abhisheka,
Krita Abhisheka,
Krita Nitya Mangalo,
Krita Nitya Mangalo,
Munin,
Munin,
Pranam Yashisham,
Pranam Yashisham,
Abhyavadayat,
Abhyavadayat,
Maitreya Vacha,
Maitreya Vacha,
Nishamya Vaikuntha Niyoja
Mukhayor, Nishamya Vaikuntha Niyoja Mukhayor,
Nishamya Vaikuntha Niyoja Mukhayor,
Nishamya Vaikuntha Niyoja Mukhayor,
Madhuchitam Vacham Guru Kramapriya,
Madhuchitam Vacham Guru Kramapriya,
Madhuchitam Vacham Guru Kramapriya,
Madhuchitam Vacham Guru Kramapriya,
Krita Abhisheka Krita Nitya Mangalo,
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 Munim Prasamya Shisham Abhyavadayat,
Munim Prasamya Shisham Abhyavadayat,
Munim Pranamya Shisham Abhyavadayat,
Munim Pranamya Shisham Abhyavadayat,
Maitreya Vacha,
Maitreya Vacha,
Nishamya Vaikuntha Niyoja Mukhayo,
Nishamya Vaikuntha Niyoja Mukhayo,
Madhuchitam Vacham Guru Kramapriya,
Madhuchitam Vacham Guru Kramapriya,
Krita Abhisheka Krita Nitya Mangalo,
Krita Abhisheka Krita Nitya Mangalo,
Munim Pranamya Shisham Abhyavadaya,
Munim Pranamya Shisham Abhyavadaya,
Maitreya Vacha,
Maitreya Vacha,
The great sage Maitreya said, Nishamya,
Nishamya,
after hearing, Vaikuntha,
Vaikuntha,
of the Lord, Niyoja,
Niyoja,
Associates,
Mukhyayo,
Mukhyayo, of the chief, Madhuchita,
Madhuchita,
like pouring honey, Vacham,
Vacham,
speeches.
Guru
Kramapriya,
Dhruva
Maharaj,
was very dear to the Lord.
Krita Abhisheka,
took his sacred bath.
Krita,
performed.
Nitya Mangala,
his daily spiritual duties.
Munin,
to the sages.
Pranamya,
having offered obeisances.
Ashisham,
blessings.
Abhyavadayat,
accepted.
Translation. The great sage Maitreya continued, Maharaj Dhruva was very dear to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. When he heard the sweet speeches of the Lord's chief associates in the Vaikuntha planet, he immediately took a sacred bath, dressed himself with suitable ornaments, and perform his daily spiritual duties. Therefore, he offered his respectful obeisances. Thereafter, he offered his respectful obeisances to the great sages present there and accepted their blessings. Purport by His Divine Grace Srila Prabhupada. We should mark how beautiful Dhruva Maharaj was in his devotional service, even at the time he left this material world. He was constantly alert in the performance of devotional duties. Every devotee should take his bath early in the morning and decorate his body with tilak. In Kali Yuga, one can hardly acquire gold or jeweled ornaments, but the 12 tilak marks on the body are sufficient as auspicious decorations to purify the body. Since Dhruva Maharaj was living at that time at Bhadrik Ashram, there were other great sages there. He did not become puffed up because the airplane sent by Lord Vishnu was waiting for him as a humble Vaishnava. He accepted blessings from all the sages before riding on the plane brought by the chief of the Vaikuntha associates. Translation and purport again. Maitriya Vacha, Nishamya Vaikuntha Niyo Jamukyo, Madhu Chitam Vacham Uru Krama Priyam, Krita Visheka Krita Nitya Mangalo, Munim Pranam Yashisam Abhyavadaya. The great sage Maitreya continued, Maharaj Dhruva was very dear to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. When he heard the sweet speeches of the Lord's Chief Associates in the Vaikuntha planet, he immediately took his sacred bath, dressed himself with suitable ornaments, and performed his daily spiritual duties. Thereafter, he offered his respectful obeisances to the great sages present there and accepted their blessings. Omagyana timandasya gananjana salakaya shaksumritam yena tasmai shri guruvinama. Namo Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prasadhanay Srimati Bhaktivedanta Swami Namne. Namaste Sarasvati Devi Gauravani Pracharine. Vyasesa Srimurani Vasishtha Krishna. There are two or three important points here, highlighted by Prabhupada in this verse. One is how diligent Dhruva Maharaj was in performing his devotional duties. Even at the time, we were going to leave this material world and go back home back to Godhead. Quite a number of years ago, when I was still in Sweden, I was visiting Bhaktivedanta Manor. I was staying there for a few days, doing some shopping at the Bhaktivedanta Limited, where there were all kinds of paraphernalia, for the shop in the preaching center in Stockholm. So I was staying in the Brahmacharya Ashram, and one morning, there was this senior devotee, a Prabhupada disciple from Scotland. He was preaching to one of the Brahmacharya. And I would say, obviously the Brahmacharya was having some difficulty or whatever. So, and I remember that he, practically every sentence or every other sentence, this devotee was, this Prabhupada disciple, he was telling the Brahmacharya, we have to be very careful, we have to be very careful in our execution of devotion service. He keep repeating the word careful. And because he repeated it so many times, it kind of stuck in my head. And I was contemplating it for quite a while. You have to be very careful. And then realize how careless we often are in the execution of devotional service. How negligent we are. Sometimes we just don't take things seriously. You say, I don't do this once. I don't do that. It's okay. I'll make it up. But it keeps stressing. We have to be very careful. Very careful in the execution of devotional service, very careful in the execution of the japa, the study, hearing, chanting, the nine limbs of devotional service process. Sravanam, Kirtanam, Vishnu, Smaranam, Mandanam, Dasyam, Sakyam, Atma, Nivedanam. So anytime you perform this, you just have to be very, very cautious. And for most of us who are having so many duties, the example of Dhruva Maharaj is also very pertinent here. When Dhruva Maharaj was a young boy, he practically achieved perfection in his meditation. So much so, Vishnu appeared before him. But he was sent back to perform his duties. And he did that very wonderfully. When his brother was killed and his father passed away, he assumed the kingdom. And he ruled the kingdom and took care of all the citizens in the kingdom. Very heavy responsibility. Anyone who is responsible for somebody, you can feel the burden of responsibility on the shoulder. The parents, they know that. The parents, the father or the mother, they feel the responsibility, the burden of the responsibility on their shoulder. I remember a long time when my daughter was born, and seeing how fragile small kids are, no matter how much you try to take care and keep an eager eye over them, you cannot be standing in front of them 24 hours. Just a little thing that they can get hurt. Because when she was small, just learning how to walk, she had this trumpet, the small plastic trumpet, playing in the mouth and walked, and she fell. Went right to, and take her to the hospital. And the doctor was not very sensitive. Even when I think of it, it was like, I cringed. I had to hold her down, and the doctor forced open her mouth and took the tube to poke at the wound and see if it had gone through. She was freaking out so much that for many years, anyone like a nurse or doctor, why she was there. Every time she sees that, she's a freak out from it. And I realized that no matter how much we care, it's a very big responsibility. And much more so when we reach the fifth canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, Lord Rishabhabh says that one should not be a guru, a father, a mother, or anyone be responsible unless you can deliver the dependent from repeated birth and death. Now, how heavy is that responsibility? And we're talking just about one or two kids, or three kids, or whatever. So, and often, I don't know if it still happens anymore, the eternal conflict between the brahmacharya and the grihastha. The brahmacharya sometimes think these grihasthas, they are entangled, so many unnecessary responsibility. And grihastha think that brahmacharya, they're just carefree, no responsibility. But actually it's not true. Both. Grihastha have the responsibility, the duties. Brahmacharya also have the responsibility, they practically have the responsibility of the whole world on the shoulder. Working under the direction of the spiritual master. They are not just taking care of one or two person. They're taking care of the whole city, wherever they're residing. This is a responsibility. To somehow try to distribute Krishna consciousness to them and deliver as many as possible. That's also a big responsibility. So Dhruva Maharaj came back and took responsibility. Now you cannot be completely detached. When you have responsibility, you cannot be completely detached from the responsibility. Because you're completely detached, then how can you take on the responsibility? That in the old days, we have this false understanding that taking care of children is maya. So we have to be detached. So when you try to artificially detach ourselves from the children, then how can you take responsibility over them? There has to be some form of attachment to take responsibility. So Dhruva Maharaj was taking care of all this responsibility for so many of his citizens. And sometimes, when you're taking up all this responsibility, you get a bit entangled. But because he was a pure devotee with very good training, when the time comes, he was able to relinquish all the responsibility and go to the forest and prepare himself to go back home to Bali. That's where the Varnashram comes in. The Brahmachari, Grihastha, Vanaprastha, Sannyasa, to prepare ourselves gradually to the different stages where we just renounce sannyas. Of course, in the Kali Yuga, Bhaktivinoda Thakur recommends Kshetra Sannyas. In the Shastra, Kshetra Sannyas means that you stay in one place with the husband or the wife and perform devotional service in that one place. And that becomes your proper dadadesh, your place of worship, the place of devotional service. But whatever situation we are in, or whatever destination we take, ultimately the test is how we become detached. Earlier on, Prabhupada gave the example of a coconut. A dry coconut, the fruit in the coconut is loose from the coconut, has become dry. When you shake it, you can feel the fruit moving. So in that purpose, Prabhupada explained, when we take up the process of devotional service, our coconut is dry. But it takes time to become completely dry. And very often we purify ourselves from our bodily, we can through the regulative principles, we can more or less live pretty purely. But what about the mind, the intelligence, our false ego? That requires a little bit more work because it's more subtle. Long time ago, when I was a very new devotee, one private disciple, we were sitting down talking, and he said something to me that really struck me. And I remember it throughout my whole devotional life. He said that sometimes it's quite easy to just purify our body. Cleaning our body, chanting. But they say very often devotees, they neglect to purify the mind and to purify the intelligence. And that's why so many devotees leave, because they don't make the endeavor to purify the mind intelligence. So he must be given very good instruction because he's still around, living in the temple and doing service. And when he told me that, sometimes, sometimes when devotees tell you something or someone tells you something, out of the whole conversation, there may be just one or two things that strike you and stands out, and you just remember it. So I kind of just remember that about purifying the intelligence. So I asked, how do you purify the intelligence? He said, you have to study Prabhupada's book. You have to study the philosophy. You have to understand the philosophy. Strengthen our intelligence with philosophical understanding. Because what's the function of the intelligence? The intelligence is to make discrimination. We get so many sensual impulses through our senses and go through the mind. So our intelligence will determine what is right and what is wrong. But if our intelligence is strengthened by philosophical understanding, very grounded in our Krishna conscious philosophy, we will make very good choices in our life. So when the time comes, Dhruva Maharaj just renounced and walked away from everything. And you hear that throughout the Srimad Bhagavatam, you have stories of great kings, emperor of the world. That same thing about Maharaj Priyavrata. When he was a king, he has beautiful wife, kingdom, treasury, a lot of riches. And it's described, from the external point of view, it seems that he's so overly attached to his wife, to his children, to his kingdom. But internally, he was always absorbed in Krishna consciousness. So that's a great lesson to learn. Externally, we perform our duty with great diligence, whatever those duties may be. But internally, we have to constantly cleanse ourselves, constantly be absorbed. And that's why the sadhana process, again, come back, diligent. How diligently we are practicing our Krishna consciousness, performing our sadhana, our chanting, and studying, the regular practice, will keep us clean and absorbed internally, in our Krishna consciousness. So it's time to give up, we give up. Or sometimes we just take it away. And if you are internally been absorbed all this time, even though something very, very dear is taken away, we may be disturbed slightly, but we won't be overly disturbed. Because our consciousness is anchored strongly at the lotus feet of Krishna. So this very carefully practicing our devotional service is very important. It's something that we should meditate on every day. Every day measure ourselves. How did I perform today? How can I improve tomorrow? If you just make this one conscious effort every day, and you'll see, you will just very steadily progress in Krishna consciousness. Just make this simple adjustment to measure ourselves every day. Ask ourselves honestly, how did I perform today? Where can I, in which area in my devotional practice can I improve tomorrow? So every day we just make a slight improvement. Not much, just a very slight improvement. 5 years down the road, 10 years down the road, 20, 30 years down the road. You make a lot of progress. Like they say, if there ever was a car that could drive automatically, and there's a straight road all the way from here to Sydney, no turning, just straight road, and you point the car in that right direction, he will just minutely 0.00 something percent off, he will never reach Sydney. He will end up somewhere else. So from here to Krishna consciousness, maybe just next moment, or maybe many years. So every day we just recalibrate the direction, readjust our GPS, making sure it's still pointing in the right direction. Otherwise, we'll be active, doing something, and 5 years, where am I? Where are all the devotees? Where's everyone? And it happens over and over again. And 10, 20 years, 30 years, 40 years is not a long time. You speak to some of the oldies, like Jnana Samudra Prabhu. They are some of those oldies, and Prabhu there. It looked like just yesterday. We were new bhaktas walking into the temple, the first time coming to the temple, Sunday feast or whatever, completely like, eyes like, completely, what's happening? Everything is overwhelming, everything is fresh, everything is like, it's just like a sensory overload. It is. Sometimes you come to a temple, especially if you are a Westerner, not familiar with deity worship and all that, it's a sensory overload. I had such a sensory overload, it took me some time to really process all the different things going on. And the other thing Prabhupada pointed out here was the attitude of Dhruva Maharaj. How despite that he has achieved such a high and elevated position, throughout Bhagavatam, I don't remember reading anything where the Vishnu Dutas come personally to pick someone up and bring them back home back to Godhead. Was there any other in the Bhagavatam besides Dhruva Maharaj? No. Very, very unique. They came personally in the airplane and invited him to please get on board and take him back from Bangladesh. Pardon? Ajami, now Vishnu Duda came to stop the Yamadutas. Oh, yeah, after. Yes, that's right. Thank you. Yes, Ajami also. Yeah. So only these two instances that we know of. Maybe there are more in the Puranas or whatever. So advanced, but he remained humble. He was not at all puffed up. So that's another thing that we have to recalibrate every day to remind ourselves who we really are, that we do not become puffed up, that become too proud, that certainly I'm so advanced. At every stage, as we progress in devotional service, we're learning more things, we're becoming more astute in our devotional life, and we have to constantly be humble. Not that we just turn around and say, I don't have to offer respect to this devotee, I don't have to offer respect. We offer respect to everyone. To every devotee, we offer respect. Otherwise, we become Puna Musika Bhava. Again, we become a mouse. Especially if we disrespect the spiritual master or even other senior Vaishnava, we become a mouse again. Because our offenses will kill our devotional service. Mati Hatta, like a mad elephant offense. Here we are making great endeavor to cultivate our Bhakti Lata Bish, our trip of devotional service, tender garden. And we allow mad elephant to come into the garden and stamp on it. When the elephant stamps into the ground, it takes a long time before anything will grow again. So that's another thing we have to be very careful to remain humble. A long time ago, then again you see that we don't only get the instruction from the spiritual master, our spiritual master. We take instruction and we learn from every other Vaishnavas who can add something to our spiritual life, who may be able to tell us something that we can learn from. There's another important lesson I learned from Satchinandan Swami. Satchinandan Swami, wonderful devotee. I knew him when he was a brahmachari. One time I asked him, I said, Maharaj, because at that time he was traveling around in Germany and he don't have a car. He wanted to say of a driver. He was just arriving in the temple. And he depends on someone to drive him to the next temple. And he always gets someone willing, very enthusiastic to drive him from one place to another. And he told me one very, very important instruction lesson. He said, as a preacher, especially when you're preaching, you're taking care of others, they will look up to you. They will respect you. And sometimes they may even worship you. And he said, and it's a big burden and responsibility of a preacher to draw the attention of the people they're preaching to them. Because especially when you're preaching to new people, they don't know Krishna. They don't know about Prabhupada much. And until they read the books, say, they only have you. You are the reference point, he said. So you have to draw them towards you. You have to attract them and get them attached to you. So by become attracted to you and attached to you, then you can instruct them. They'll be very eager to hear whatever you have to say. And you engage them. Sometimes you are engaging in some personal service. He said, this is the burden and responsibility of a preacher. That sometimes you have to get them to do so. Just like a spiritual master, he allowed the disciple to worship them, to serve them. I always thought when we do the Abhishek, the foot bath on Vyasa Puja, how inconvenient and how embarrassing it is. You sit there in front of so many people and you're getting your foot washed with all kinds of items like milk and all. And I don't think it's a very enjoyable thing to get your feet washed that way. Sometimes I go massage it, wash your feet first. I still feel so uncomfortable doing that, even though I'm paying for it. You know? But it's a way the spiritual master draw the service from the disciple. But Satyananda Maharaj said, but it's very, very important that you, it does not stop there. You get people attached to you, attracted to you, they offer service to you, they make you worship you. Don't stop there. Don't start thinking that I am such a great devotee. Look at all my followers. Look at my congregation, my flock. By my power, spiritual power, I'm going to take him back to the guy. Then now that mentality, that attitude will cause you to fall down. Because you will not be able to carry all this burden. The burden will be too heavy. So therefore, you draw the attention, the attachment, capture the attachment, and you direct it. You have to direct it towards Krishna. Only Krishna can carry all this burden. Even the spiritual master, he accept in the time of initiation, he absorbed the sins of the disciple, but he passed on to the parampara, to Krishna. So therefore, another great sannyasi, Srinath Maharaj, told me one time, he said, when people come, you get them engaged. Even if there's no service, create a service. Drop something on the floor. And say, can you help me? Here's a bucket. And because they attach you, they do something. And they'll clean the floor. That act of service get them to cross the line from being just an observer to become part of it. They're engaged in service. Now they're part of the organization. They're part of the team. So those who are preaching in urban yoga or wherever, mantra launch or whatever, very important. Don't just do kirtan lecture or bhakti riksha for that matter. Get them to do service. It doesn't have to be straight away come to them and do service. If you're doing bhakti riksha in the home, get them to help out, maybe move them, take away the carpet, the mat from the floor, clean up the floor a little bit, serve a little bit prasada, immediately they have crossed over the line. There was one time I was preaching in Stockholm, and there was this couple of young boys, they were coming regularly, I was cultivating them. And one of them, he's working, one of them loved pasta. So every time he come, I cook a big pot of pasta, and I'm just feeding pasta. And one weekend, I wanted to go to the main temple, the VPT headquarters. I wanted to go there because when you're preaching in the city center, you want to go back to temple, deities and everything. So I wanted to go back to the temple for the weekend, but I have some rounds to do. And I asked this boy, I said, would you like to go to Koshnes tonight? And I said, no, I don't feel like going anywhere, I'll just stay here. And I looked a bit disappointed. And he said, why? I said, I wanted to go to the temple by some rounds. I thought maybe you can drive and I'll finish up my rounds on the way there. He said, oh, you want to go? I'll drive you. So two things happened. Right? I get to get my rounds done, the chauffeur, but I get to bring him to the temple and stay for the weekend. So he said to stay on the weekend. When you stay on the weekend, you go for Mangarati and go for the whole food morning program. And in between you chant japa and you go for class. That was how we meet a lot of devotees also in Copenhagen. During Sunday feast program, I may be preaching to some young boy, find out what they are. Then many of these young boys, they come, they are on welfare. They don't work in Copenhagen, they are on welfare. And then they use all the welfare money for drugs. So I come to the temple and I see here's a potential. There's some interest in Krishna consciousness. I said, by the way, what are you doing the next few days? He said, no, nothing. Actually, I'm going to Stockholm, which is like six, 7 hours drive, right? I'm going to Stockholm tomorrow. Would you like to come? He said, yeah. I mean, who doesn't want to go for a free trip? And I said, yeah, okay. I said, all right, I'll pick you up tomorrow. I was not going to Sweden. I was not planning to go to Sweden. I just decided on the spot that I'm going to go to Sweden because I want to take him with me. So now what happened when you're on the way to 6-7 hours, you're sitting in a car, he's not going anywhere. You're 6-7 hours to preach to him. And then you come to the temple, there's nowhere to go. There's the city. So you have to go to the whole morning program. Then you introduce him to Japa chanting. So on the way back, preach to him again. And I use a Sota Swami heavy duty preaching on the way back because it's already softened up. I said, why do you want to waste your time out there? Just smoking dope and wasting your life away. You're not doing anything usual. Finally, he found the cure for all material suffering. You should apply it and share it with others. Can you imagine you found the cure for AIDS and you keep it to yourself and you don't announce it to the world? Imagine what people will do to you when they find out that this guy has a cure all this time and you won't tell anyone. They will lynch you and beat you up. So 6-7 hours on the way back preaching. Just before you arrive in Copenhagen, he said, all right, I surrender. I joined temple. He had this long, curly hair. Young, was just 19, 20 years old. Came back straight to temple, take him, give him a kamcha, walk him to the temple, shave him up straight away. I see a photo of that. Classic. And so many devotees join the temple just from that. Either that or we drive all the way to German farm, the Shinga farm. That's 13 hours drive. A lot of time to preach. 13 hours there, 13 hours back. So, and throughout the time, they get association of devotees, they hear kirtan, they hear lectures, and they have teaching. By the way, I don't do that to everyone. Time, place, circumstances, kala, patronation. He was ready. And he was not doing anything useful. And the reason why we have to take them out of Copenhagen because the atmosphere is so intensely tamaguna there. When Sasuru Maharaj came, and I gave him a bit of a briefing on Copenhagen, when he left, he said, you are right. I can feel the atmosphere is so tamaguna here in Copenhagen. So, where was I? Yes, preaching. And being humble. So, humility is very, very important quality in devotional service. And it is one of the first quality that Krishna described Bhagavad Gita as someone who is in knowledge. In fact, he used the two words, humility and pridelessness, which are quite similar. So the first two words, first two qualities describe humility, pridelessness. This is a symptom of someone who is in knowledge. So Dhruva Maharaj, although he was very elevated about to go back to Godhead, he remained very humble. He went around, he offered his obeisances to the sages in the area and prayed for the blessings. Ask for that blessing. Because a devotee never considered themselves to be very advanced. Only those who are not advanced will think that they're very advanced. And those who are advanced will think that they're not advanced. So those who are not so advanced, they have a little bit of advancement, but big chunk of impurities. They look at that little bit of advancement and they think they're very advanced. But the advanced devotee, the pure devotee, they have a huge lot of advancement, maybe tiny little bit of impurity. They think this tiny bit is so huge. And then I'm so fallen. And it is not a forced humility kind of thing. Sometimes you see devotees going around, that's a problem. And when it's time to, when you give some instruction at that time, they won't listen. So it's not a false community. They actually genuinely go around and ask for prayer and accept the blessings of the Vaishnava before that. The right, the true attitude of a Vaishnava. So in this way, Dhruva Maharaj is going back to Godhead. And being a true Vaishnava, he didn't just think of himself. Later on, you'll find out how. He asked, what about my guru, my mother, who is my Vata Daksha guru? She is the one who pointed the way for me to start my spiritual journey. He said, Sananda said, don't worry, he's going also going back on another airplane. And that goes to show the benefit. Dhruva Maharaj's mother did not achieve the same spiritual level as Dhruva, but she still gets the benefit of going back to Godhead. That should inspire us to preach. We may not be great devotees, but if we can somehow talk to someone, care for someone, and point that person towards a spiritual path, and that person become a pure devotee, he'll take us back to Godhead. So we need to plant many. Hatch your fact, say. Not just one, but many. And hopefully at least one or more of them will become pure devotees. And when they come back to Godhead, we get a free ticket. So are there any comments? Question? Yes, Prabhu.
When you were saying that we go back home, there's a time you were saying that we take back 32 of our generation.
Pardon?
When we go back home, we take 32 of our generations with us.
Yes. Before and after. There's so many benefits just being a devotee. It's not even for ourselves. The whole ancestors and descendants, they all get purified. That was also one of the things when I read that helped me to detach from my family. I was very caught because I joined Sweden. I thought you were joined. What about my family? You know? But I read that and said, okay, this is the best I can do for my family by becoming a devotee myself. Right, anyone else? Yes, ma'am.
Srila Prabhupada was translating right up to the moment of the leaving the body.
Yeah.
He was very careful in seeking forgiveness from his Lord, his Godbrothers.
You mean you were just engaging, serving right up to the last breath? That's what you're saying? Yeah. Yeah, that's a good example. Prabhupada showed by his example that right practically up to his last breath, he was serving, he was preaching. And if you ever get a chance to read the 13th chapter, Brahma Vimoha Lila, the 13th chapter of the Srimad Bhagavatam, of the 10th canto, amazing purpose, some of the most amazing purpose you can find. And Prabhupada translated and gave that purpose, practicing on his deathbed, just before he's leaving. And you see the video of Javita Swami holding the mic so close to his mouth. And Prabhupada often said, he never considered retirement. He always said, I want to die like Arjuna in the battlefield. And he did. Preaching right all the way. And in this way, show the example for all his followers. This is the mood. This is the attitude. This is the attitude and mood of followers in ISKCON, specifically. Because Prabhupada found that child, he set the mood for the movement. We are preachers.
I'm very glad you mentioned about Satyananda Swami. I happened to go there, Burning Temple, and his preaching is so excellent. Even the young people, between 20 and 25, they were sleeping in the ashram rather than at home. The wife was at home, the guru, husband was with Satyananda Swami. He's such a great devotee. And in Germany, I found another thing. I was doing my MD thesis in Würzburg University.
In which university?
Würzburg. And I used to go to Heidelberg by train.
The main temple.
Yeah. And when I reached there, it would be by train by time, 8 or 9 o'clock. But my prasada was always ready. Every weekend, they used to keep the prasada.
You stay in the temple weekend?
Yeah.
What year was that?
1991, 92.
That means temple president of Vishwadev?
Yes.
Good friend, my good friend.
Excellent preaching.
Very nice devotee, Vishwadev. Okay.
Same thing with Narsingdev temple in South Germany.
Many of these disciples of Prabhupada, the leaders there, they all have the unique quality. Satyananda Swami always seems smart.
Very humble.
He has this boyish nature. Every time I see him, like when I see him, I go, come, just take you along on the kirtan, running around, still running around.
And if we can keep them, if we can, you will go from the ashram to the Berlin city and to China, 2 hours, 3 hours, intense.
Another question? No? Yes, Prabhu.
Prabhupada explains in the seventh canto, one more devotee, the Vishnu, the aeroplane was sent. The devotee from South India, Dhamna, was doing mental worship, and his finger got burned when he tasted hot sweet rice.
Okay.
Vishnu also sent him an aeroplane.
Any other question from the youth? Yes.
So you were saying that you don't do.
There's a self-love. I'm hearing problem from all the kirtan over the years.
You were saying before that you don't do the heavy preaching to everyone who convert one from pretty much in one day. So what is your strategy when, to identify how much to give to
them? Yes. We have to know how much to give.
How do you do it?
Over time. I often told this story before in my class that the first time I ever preached, the first 2 times I preached, I never see these people again. I hammered them so hard, they never show up in the temple. They just disappeared. And I then realized that I'm not doing it the right way. So I stopped preaching. For 2-3 years, I just stopped preaching to any Sunday feast guests. And all I do was just sit there. And I never figured out, how do they begin a conversation? And how do they lead them towards Krishna conscious philosophy or whatever? And what do you, I never figured out in the beginning how you do it without just coming in like a hammer. So what I do is, during Sunday feast, I have a plate of prasadam, and I seek out any of the senior devotees. At that time, practically everyone was a senior devotee because I was new. I'll just sit down next to him while they're talking to the guests. And I'll just sit there and listen. For 2 years, 3 years, I would just sit there and listen and learn and learn and learn and learn. And then gradually started doing it. In sales, they say, people don't care what you say, have to say until they know how much you can. There's a good principle to apply. When we're preaching to guests, when we're preaching to someone, whether it's a guest or other devotee, you have to show that you can. And that's why it's always important to develop a relationship, especially devotees, you develop a relationship then first. When the relationship is there, then the trust is there. Then you can preach. I know I don't preach or give instruction to anyone practically. Unless they ask. So mainly just encourage. And again, you said when we have good sadhana, our mind is very clear. When we're in front of people, our brain is very sharp. We pick up just by the conversation. You ask some question, you speak. Let the person talk. These are all like sales principles. Preaching is nothing but sales. So, it's just like sales. You ask and you let people talk. The more they talk, the more they tell you how to sell to them. In the end, you don't have to sell anything. You just repeat, give them what they want, and they'll just buy. So, preaching is like that. You ask questions, try to understand where they're from, what they want, what is important to them. And just repeat those things. And why do they buy it? Because they feel they're not coming from you, it's coming from them. You're just basically reaffirming what they're saying. Brand proprietorship turns sand into gold because it comes from them, they take ownership of it. Does it matter? It's the same thing when we're preaching to devotees. Usually it's just either the ego is forced a hunker around or the mind is giving trouble. They know the answers. Especially if you've been a devotee for a while, you know the answers. It's not new. But it's covered so much over and be confused and bewildered. All you have to do is just help them, guide them to find the answers. And when they find the answers, they take ownership of the answers. But if you come in hard and pound them, sometimes they accept, sometimes they don't. Because the false ego may prevent them from accepting what you have to say. So, kala patra desha, time, place, circumstances, who we are preaching to, what, where they're at, what level they're at. So if we care enough, Krishna will inspire us. What to say, how to say. And all we do is just become an instrument for Krishna. And let Krishna just speak to us. Those who are preaching, you all have this experience. Sometimes you just, what you say surprises you. Isn't it? You have that experience? Sometimes I do, like I may begin class and just, I just say something and, wow, where did that come from? I thought, wow, that was a great point. So we all just have to learn to become an instrument. That we are not a big talker, we're not a big preacher, but we sincerely want to help others. Yeah, and that's all Krishna's eternal part and parcel. And if we want sincerely want to help them, why wouldn't Krishna help us to help them?
I
really need hearing aids. Say again.
You know how you said that it's important to let me learn how to be humble as well?
Don't have to be humble.
Like we learn to be humble, like we...
Humble, yeah.
Yeah, we have to be like that. But then how do we also maintain to be confident in the world as well? How do they connect?
How to be confident
and humble.
At the same time be humble. Okay, give me some example. In what regard?
For example, public speaking or something. I don't know, but just in general, when you need, I don't have an example.
That one time we had a new devotee, and he went to big program where the GBC and Guru or everyone was there. Her comment to me after meeting him was that, I've never met anyone like that before. He's so authoritative. When he speaks with so much authority. But yet, it's such a deep humility in him. So we speak with authority because we represent the Guru Parampara. It's just, Prabhupada often gives the example of a child. If he's just repeating what the child says, he speaks, he says with confidence. But at the same time, we have to know who we really are. We are just eternal servant Krishna. So if we act from the platform of a servant, we can maintain that humility. Don't get carried away by titles, positions. Long time ago, I received a letter, just out of the blue. One and a half pages of instruction, what I should not do, from my guru at the time. And at that time was a Devanamrita Swami used to call me the frogs, the new leaders, the managers, the new leaders in the movement, and we all croaking, making a lot of noises, trying to see who's louder. So there was a bit of a tussle. Positions and title and all that. So, and the letter, the instruction was that don't become attached to title and position. They are just burden that cause you to fall down like happened to so many others. So many of those instructions I was able to take to heart. There was only one instruction I was not able to fulfill. And that was, I want you to learn to speak Swedish in such a way that nobody knows that you're nothing from Sweden. And I want you to preach in Swedish. So I tried giving a class in Swedish once to a small group. They must have been so hilarious because they were barely holding back from laughing. And I never did it again. They were like, Does that answer your question?
Yeah.
Always think of ourselves as servant. So that means that keep ourselves grounded, every opportunity we serve. So if anyone knows me and who call me on the phone, my first answer when I answer the phone. It's Haribo Prabhu, Haribo Mataji, how can I serve you? I always answer the phone that way usually. Maybe it's not always humble like that, but because I keep doing it, I remind myself, I'm here to serve you. What can I do for you? What can I do to make you happy? So you just develop this few attitude like that, how can I serve you? What can I do to make you happy? What can I do for you today? If you keep repeating enough time, you start to become part of us, you become a habit.
Yeah.
But when it's time to preach, Prabhupada gave an example actually of the Matajis, you know, on Sankirtan. Some Mataji are asking Prabhupada how to behave. You say, when you're out on the street, you behave like a lioness out on the street. And you come back to the temple, you're like a lamb. Is that? When we're representing Krishna, we speak with authority. We act with authority. But we know we are just servant of Krishna, we're acting on his behalf. It's a lot to learn. We can know the philosophy, we can repeat slokas after sloka, but all these different final point of Vaishnava etiquette is this: what these are the decorations of the Vaishnava. These are the jewels that make the Vaishnava shine. Ultimately, no matter what we achieve in life, how much we achieve, we build big temple, we do so much big whatever. Ultimately, it boils down to how is our Krishna consciousness developing within us. That's the most important thing. How am I developing as a devotee? Because no matter how many bhakti ratio we do, how many temples we build, how many devotees we make, how many books we distribute, so on and so on and so forth, we have to leave it all behind. At the time of them, we are tested. How is my Krishna consciousness? Right? Thank you very much. Shri Prabhupada.